The reason people aren't financially free is they don't know what to do and they don't know where to start. I want you to join Joey and I at the Virtual Inner Circle Live, April the 4th through the 6th, as we share with you the exact answers to those questions. We only do this event one time per year. I don't want you to miss out. Go to wealthwalkwallstreet.com/live and enter promo code podcast. When you're at this event, you're going to get your investor DNA. You're going to get access to up to 6 different passive income strategies. So you know, leaving this event, exactly what to do, taking our decades of knowledge so that you can start becoming financially free. Go to wealthwalkwallstreet.com/live and enter the promo code podcast.
Welcome to the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast, your guide to understanding how to get out of the Wall Street rat race and start your own mailbox money lifestyle. Now, don't let these handsome Southern draws fool you. These financial minds are teaching our country to enhance savings, increase cash flow, and create passive income, all without the help of Wall Street. Are you ready to break through? Now, here are your hosts, Russ Morgan and Joey Murray.
Welcome. This is the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast. Your host, Joey, the Italian Stallion Murray, joined as always by Russ, the idea guy, Morgan. Russ, today's episode is a continuation of our book review of Becoming Your Own Banker by R. Nelson Nash. This is book review number 15, and we are still not done with the book. This is absurd.
This is the way we read books, by the way. It takes a year to complete it.
Slow and steady wins the race. That's what I say.
Well, and today, though, I think it's appropriate for us to even make that analogy that long-range thinking is required when trying to play out this whole concept of becoming your own banker.
How many times has Nelson, over the years, with us at lunch or otherwise, said, don't be afraid to think long range?
Every time.
And it was the simplest of things, but reading through this chapter here, this is an even distribution of age classes on page 71 and 72 of his book. It's just so much more profound to me.
Well, I think one of the things that you'll probably take away from this one little section in the book is that he's trying to give a way for you to think, how do I play out this becoming your own banker process for generations, right? Because a lot of times you may be the first one in your family who's ever identified this. If not, if you had a parent or grandparent who helped you see this ahead of time, congratulations. You're like in the super minority of this. For most of us, it's like, okay, I really am digging this. I want to apply this. And I would love to see this play out for generations to come, but I don't really know how to do that.
Well, I think one of our clients said it best. Wyatt actually messaged me after reading this. And first of all, he had a big wow on a picture. He took a picture of this area of the book. And he said, wow. And I said, man, tell me what you're thinking. And he said, if this works this well for me, and I'm thinking, man, I wish someone had done this for me. Isn't it just make sense that I would do it for my kids? Like do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And I thought that was a pretty simple idea, but also very profound, is once you realize the power of infinite banking, you're like, man, how can I get this into generations to come thinking long range?
Well, and excuse us for being so presumptive to think that you actually already know what we're talking about. Because it's possible this could be your first episode, right?
That's right.
If you've never read the book Becoming Your Own Banker by R. Nelson Nash, go right there on our website, wealthwalkwallstreet.com, hit the infinite banking page, and there's a link. You can buy the book directly from Nelson Nash's son-in-law, who runs a company for him, the infinite banking company. I would tell you, get this book, and you can then go back and follow along with every single chapter that we've broke this out, because I think this is one of those that really helps people start to see how it does play out over a long time. And He starts off this chapter, Joey. He says, a good man leaves an inheritance for his children's children. This is Proverbs, right?
That's right.
And I think sometimes we think of legacy in the simplest of ways. Legacy, if you go to Google, I don't know if this is a Webster's definition. I don't know if anybody still has that. We just go to Google and we type in legacy, and it says an amount of money or property left to someone in a will. Now, Joey, I got a question for you. If you could leave your kids, your grandkids, your future generations, one of two things. You could leave them money that you've accumulated over your lifetime, or two, you could leave them the knowledge of how you created it so that they could go and do it themselves. Which one of the two would you leave them?
A clear answer is knowledge. Knowledge of how to create money, it far surpasses the actual dollars themselves.
Well, I mean, think about it. What is it worth? What is knowledge, the power of creating worth, as opposed to just money itself?
I mean, there's no comparison, because the actual dollars are fleeting if they're in the hands of somebody that doesn't, one, know how to manage it, and two, know how to take it and grow it from there.
Well, if you think about that, so I watched that history documentary on the men who built America. Have you seen that yet?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a bunch of different guys that they cover.
Well, and one of them that they covered was Commodore Vanderbilt. And I just remember, because I had read back in some other stuff prior about how big of a fortune Commodore Vanderbilt had built in the late 1800s. I think it was like, in today's dollars, like $2.1 billion. At the time, he was the second wealthiest individual in America behind John D. Rockefeller.
Yeah.
And I just remember them talking about, he died about 5 years later, his son died, who he had passed the fortune down to. And then reading that, like 30 years after his death, there was not any member of the family who would register as one of the top wealthiest people in the U.S.
Yeah, I think I remember some about that story. His son died really young, right?
Yep.
It wasn't that he, you know, it was like within about 10 years or maybe 8 years of his.
I think I just said five, but go ahead with it. The fact that you don't listen to me, that's okay.
I'm sorry. You were saying something I wasn't listening.
You're correct. Keep going.
Yeah. And I think that to me is the pivotal thing, is that the knowledge died right then. There wasn't enough time, or I shouldn't say there wasn't enough time. They didn't make it a point to pass that on.
Well, I want to break this out, because we don't know. I mean, I'm just kind of going back and reading on it and watching documentaries on it. I don't know, but during the documentary of The Men Who Built America, he was an innovator. He recognized the need for shipping, and he built this amazing shipping corporation that amassed this huge fortune. But then he, being an innovator, saw transportation moving from shipping to railroads. And so he took all of that money and shifted it into railroads, and it just blew it up.
To be ahead of the curve, like to be the first ones in that space.
Exactly. Yeah. And now what I would think, though, is maybe what happened is that knowledge and innovation either died just with him, or maybe with his son, because they said his son actually expanded the fortune past him, but he did die shortly thereafter him. And the others did not either have the motivation or didn't have the knowledge. I don't know exactly what it is. Maybe they had the lack of vision of where things were going, and they stayed in railroad, right? They didn't see it. They became Blockbuster.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, to kind of further talk about the point of how important knowledge is, I think about even like present day things that we can see all around us. Like, there are millionaires who amass great wealth and then lost it all through some either malinvestment or, you know, some sort of scandal or something like that. But since they knew how to amass this wealth, they've been able to bounce back and now either get all of that back or even grow from there. Like guys like Steve Jobs, Martha Stewart. I mean, she's not a guy, but you get the point. Even MC Hammer. I mean,
you can't touch this.
If you didn't say it, I was going to. So, but in George Foreman, there's plenty of other examples, but that to me kind of highlights the importance of the knowledge of how money works and how you can actually grow and amass wealth.
Well, you're losing your voice there, so I'm going to jump in. Walt Disney is one of those that I'd read about as well. Early on in Walt Disney's career, he had built a film company that actually lost its backing, and so ultimately he ended up having to file bankruptcy. But then obviously he turned that to his cartoon production company, in which then went on to create a massive wealth through building Disneyland and then ultimately Disney World. I mean, it's the innovation, the ability to think, the ability to imagine. And that's why we keep coming back to Nelson Nash's book, when he says that you must think long range. Because if you're not willing to think long range, you're probably not a thinker. And he says 5% of the people actually think. 10% of the people think that they think, but 85% of the people would rather die than think.
Yeah, that always makes you think, no pun intended, which one am I?
Yeah. Well, I would think that if we're going to keep saying the word, it's important to think. Okay, I've listened to at least 5 podcasts. I'm now an expert in the infinite banking process. Maybe not, but yet I would love to talk to somebody about it. How can they do it?
It's as simple as going to freecall.wealthwithoutwallstreet.com. You can sign up for a short 15-minute call to see if this is a fit for you, and you can work with one of our coaches to financial freedom.
The whole idea behind this is that you and I, as we were diving into this area of this book, we were talking about how important this is, the importance of how to pass along the knowledge that we have.
All right. Well, what do you think, though, Joey, is standing? What's one of the main reasons or biggest obstacles? What's standing in somebody's way from being able to accomplish this passing down of knowledge or passing down of wealth? What do you think the limitation is out there?
I don't know if this applies to everybody, but I think the majority of people in America today have been bought into the idea of funding types of accounts that are very individual in nature.
Like, explain.
Like, okay, 401ks, for instance, that is not a family type of vehicle. It is an individual retirement account.
So you don't think somebody comes home with their 401k statement and sits down with their kids on the couch and goes through line item by line item of what happened?
No, that doesn't happen.
You don't think they say, okay, kids, when I'm no longer here, this is what you're going to get?
No, because it would be sickening. According to our CPA, the 401ks, IRAs of the world are the worst at generational wealth transfer from a tax perspective.
And that's a really big statement from someone who actually helps people and families when a family member dies and they do have to pass that money down, for them to say it is the worst asset to pass down to the next generation. But you don't think they sit down with their kids and they say, here, kids, let me show you how you can start a business through this statement?
No, not a chance. And I think they just naturally create, we've talked about this on other shows, it naturally creates silos within the family. Because, okay, son, you have to handle your retirement in this account. I'm going to handle my retirement in this account, and so on and so forth. It kind of just permeates the generations. And like we said, there's nothing really left at the end of the time anyway.
So you don't think they sit down with their kids and say, let me show you how we're going to pay for your college with this statement?
No. I mean, with 529, maybe.
No, but I'm just saying the 401k, that's the IRA. These are the places that mainstream America is being sold hook, line, and sinker. And I mean hook, because you are the fish in this situation, right? And they are reeling you in, marlin or brim, I don't know. They're just bringing you into the boat to say, keep your money here for 60 years. We were on an event just this past weekend, and the conversation came up is, well, what about though? And I know we're kind of derailing here, and that's our jive. But what if they give me a match, Joey?
Yeah, that's the big draw to something like a 401k. It's free money, right? It's 100% return. All these things that you've heard about the match.
But how is that in direct conflict with our goals? If our goal is to become financially free in 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, that's meaning we have more passive income coming in than monthly expenses, and we are 35, 45 years old, and we're being asked, why shouldn't we put money into a 401k? We see that that's a direct conflict, right?
Yeah, because it inherently requires you to keep your money locked up until at least into your 60s.
So I said that this weekend, I'll keep saying it. You cannot give me enough money to make me stay in something that I do not want to do for 10 years, 15 years, 25 years. I don't care the amount of money. I will not do it.
Well, tell us how you really feel.
It's the reason why I've been in two different companies that have 401ks and no longer with them, right? That's not important enough. All right, I'm going to get back onto our goal. But I do think there are many things that potentially keep us from thinking long range. And it may be asset classes like that. I would say Another one is that we probably don't have even great examples around us that we can relate to, right? Because you and I have read the book, What Would the Rockefellers Do? Great book. I'd say totally go read it. But it's going through the richest man in the world, right? I mean, it's not an example that we just are like, oh yeah, I get that. That's what I'm like. And you know, that's what my family was like. No, I don't understand that whole concept. There's not a whole lot of great examples that I can go, well, how did that wealth and that knowledge of wealth constantly get passed down that I could go, oh, I could do that.
Yeah. I think probably one of the best examples that you and I, if we talk about any book on this show that comes up the most outside of Nelson's book is Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Yeah.
Right. It doesn't matter who we've interviewed. They always say, well, then I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad and this happened and this changed. Because why?
Well, I think because it is relatable,
yeah.
Right? Whenever Robert Kiyosaki is talking about his friend's dad, who is his rich dad, who was teaching he and his friend about what he was doing, how he was acquiring rental properties, how he was buying and running convenience stores. He was just taking them through the steps. So he knew his friend. And so that's his friend's dad. He could just follow him around. And from a young age, he learned from an example, someone he could go, well, if he can do that, we're from the same city, same background, I can do that.
Yeah. Why couldn't I do the same thing? And I think we also have a really great benefit in knowing Dr. Jimbo Smith. Dr. Jimbo Smith was on our podcast a couple years ago now that I think about it. And if you want to look at that episode up, it's How to Create Business Opportunities and Generational Wealth with the Infinite Banking Concept. And he just laid out for us how he's been able to use infinite banking within his own family to buy policies for grandkids and kids and now be able to have an annual meeting with the family to talk about what they're doing as a family. I mean, lots of really great nuggets in that example.
Well, we need to be exposed to things for sure. And big ideas are great. But I mean, that's such the reason why we say, people ask me, well, why should I be a part of the community? It's exactly. Exposure. It's exposure to ideas that you would have never thought about. You would have never even thought were possible. It's exposure to networks. Being around other people, Dr. Jimbo Smith is one of those that you mentioned, someone who is actually doing this chapter, who is actually living out this chapter. Who's buying policies on kids, buying policies on grandkids, and then using the whole lending process to build family wealth and to pass down that knowledge. We need that exposure, Joey.
Absolutely. And if your network is limited, which all of ours are, when we first start, we have very few people in our little circles that know anything about this. That's why the community is so valuable. And we want to continue to grow that network more and more. Right.
So Joe, let me ask you though. So sometimes we can get into this conversation about leaving a legacy, leaving an inheritance for our children's children. And I think there could be two other factors that some people might mention that would say, okay, sometimes people don't do it because they're selfish, because they want to spend all the money while they're here. Another one could be busyness. It could be that really I would like to do it, but I just don't have the time to prepare for it. I'm too busy with my work, with then coming home and helping out with all the kids stuff. I can't make these happen. Which one of those camps do you think people could fall into? And if give them an example of how they could get out of that potentially.
I'm going to land on busyness. I think busyness is the distraction that makes us like deprioritize things like that. If they're not urgent and important, they get dropped so far down the list that we never quite get to them. It's kind of like the things that we talk about when we're looking at our life in weeks. How many weeks have gone by that we really don't even remember what happened because we're so busy at work? We get home, it's like a nonstop dash until everybody goes to bed, and then we just do it over again the next day. Like, busyness consumes us.
Busyness. Oh my goodness. We're at the end of the summer, right? Mm. I mean, summer has flown by
so fast.
We're sitting here looking over our podcast and said, wait a second, we've been doing this for 3 years. I mean, 3 years you guys have had to listen to us. I mean, I'm thinking through like how fast time moves. And yes, we can get busy. I mean, I would say some people may say, well, I don't want to leave so much money to my kids. They'll go, there's a Warren Buffett quote out there that sometimes gets thrown out. And I don't know if you know this about Warren Buffett, but he's only going to leave his kids $2 billion.
Yes. What? How could they even live?
But see, that isn't that the common response? You just gave the most typical response is that, oh, I guess they're going to just have to suffer, right?
Struggle.
But really, what's behind that? I mean, Warren Buffett is said to have said, I don't know if that's a way.
He said to have said?
Yeah, something.
Or maybe he just said it.
It was just a saying that I want to leave your children. I want to leave my children enough money where they can do anything, but not enough that they don't have to do anything. Mm. And I can get the premise of that, right? I can get the point that we don't want our kids to be lazy. Right.
That's
we
right.
want them
they need to produce.
We want them to continue to be able to create. But doesn't that always come back to, do you want to leave them the money or do you want to leave them the knowledge of how to create the money?
No doubt. That's exactly what we want to do. And that's what Nelson is really talking about here in this chapter, is a generational wealth plan. I think it's easy to lose sight that that's what he was doing, because we get so focused in on, well, he said to buy a policy on this generation and then this generation and this generation. And then if we do that, blah, blah, that's just the how, like that's just the inner workings. But the why behind it was, how do we get wealth over a long period of time to pass from one generation to the next?
I'm going to even go deeper than that. Nelson was big on helping people get out of the mindset of and the bondage of what the financial world and the government had provided. He in his other book, Building Your Warehouse of Wealth, he had a chapter dedicated out of Egypt and on to Babylon. He was talking about slavery as it related to people's mindsets of what they were doing. And I think he loves the concept of if families are building wealth with internally, that then they can pass that wealth and knowledge along and they can be a independent working unit. They don't need, I mean, he says one of the benefits of using this plan is that you don't need Social Security, right? Because you're independent. You're not going to be dependent upon it. Or, I mean, the last year that we were around him, how many times did he talk about the race riots in Tulsa?
Oh, like every time.
And be honest with you, outside of 2020, most people don't even know what that is. But now that's been brought up to the surface because of all the racial environment that we're in right now. But Nelson was talking about this long before any of that came up, because he was talking about how that, he called it the Black Wall Street, how the money internally inside of those neighborhoods would stay inside the neighborhood, would not filter out. And the reason that there was this burning, people got angry at that because they were not filtering the money out into their area. And so they got real angry and they went in and as a terrorist and burned the place down. And Nelson was saying, this is what they were doing was amazing. The way that they were building wealth internally in their families. This is what he would love for us to be able to do, is build wealth internally. So we're not depending on other people.
Yeah, 100%.
Stallion, I love it when we get to hear what people would be doing if they got to financial freedom. The last one that I got to read, somebody said, I would be driving and picking up my kid every day from school. That motivates me.
That is why you need to be a part of the community that is seeking financial freedom. Go to community.wealthwithoutwallstreet.com. You can join for free today.
And I think a couple of things, we want to dive into this particular part of the chapter here. It's easy, like we said, to get into the nuts and bolts of, okay, buy $2,000 a year premium on your grandchildren, and each one that's born, do the same thing over and over and over again. But there's a couple of issues that we want to bring to light here. And some of that has to do with, do insurance companies like for grandparents to buy policies on their grandkids?
Not mostly. I mean, some of them, we've been able to like skirt that through, but typically speaking, when you're buying an insurance policy, insurance companies want to know why, right? I mean, we're trying to buy right now insurance on three new business partners. And it's just a small investment business that we've created, right? And the insurance company's given us all sort of grief as to why we want to buy insurance on the people. We're like, they're the ones that produce the results for us.
Yeah, like if they're not here, the business doesn't exist.
Exactly.
There's no money.
So, but they also want to know, well, why would a grandparent want to buy an insurance policy on a grandkid? Like, what would be the financial loss? That's all they care about. What is the financial loss to you if you would own it. So one of the people, one of the common responses, well, okay, well, grandparent can buy the policy on the grandchild, and then they wouldn't necessarily have a financial loss. So then, but their kids would potentially have a loss, right? I mean, can you imagine the impact? I don't even actually want to imagine the impact if we were to lose a kid. But we know that there would be one. Absolutely. So then that benefit could come to the parent. But there's a problem with that, Joey.
Yeah, that would not be okay with insurance companies.
Well, no, that's not exactly right. If grandparents, you quit listening to me. I know you weren't listening, so I'm going to say it again. This is like I'm with one of my kids right now. Okay, Joey, let's go back through this. Do I need to, like, with a color, like, draw this out for you?
Get a crayon.
All right, so grandparents at the top of this triangle.
Oh, yes.
And over here, we have a grandchild as the insured. And over here, we have the parent as the beneficiary. Yeah. Why is that not okay? Why is that? I think they call that the Goodman Triangle.
Okay, Jerry. I was about to say the Bermuda Triangle, so I'm glad you said Goodman. But yeah, they are totally not okay with that. That creates more risk to the insurance company.
False.
What?
This is a Dwight Schrute false. Bear equals beats. Okay. No. The reason that's not okay is that creates a taxable environment. You cannot have three parties to the contract like that. That automatically creates a transfer tax that exists, and insurance companies don't want you to do it because they don't want to create that. So they really will not even insure it because they know immediately you can't have three parties in the contract. They can't be different. You need to have the person who's buying it, be it the beneficiary or the insured, they could necessarily be the beneficiary, which would be their estate.
All right. So as you can see, I'm still on this journey to figure this out. Russ is on the journey to figure this out. We want to make sure that we are giving you the correct information, okay? And so we're actually going to take a trip, actually, this winter.
I sure hope so.
I mean, let's hope that COVID doesn't keep us from doing this, to go in down the path of creating family trust.
Because one of the things is if it is hard, if the insurance companies are not real fans of the grandparents buying policies on kids, on grandkids, I'm sorry. And they don't want them to buy it and leave the beneficiary as the parent because that creates this taxable issue that I was just teaching you about, Joe. Then the other option is potentially using a trust. And trusts have benefits because then you can give instructions from the grave, but also they have some cons because there could be some tax implications. And so Joey and I really want to figure this out this weekend. This winter, we're planning to go to Salt Lake City. We had a guest on our show who wrote a great book called Entrusted. Andrew Howe has a legal firm there in Salt Lake City. There happens to be a couple of amazing ski mountains there, which it makes me want to go even that much more. Then we're going to go and figure this out. And when we do, we're going to come back and share it with you. But I want to wrap this up, Joey, is to say, hey, look, the biggest part that I would gain from reading this chapter is that I don't leave wealth. I leave the knowledge of wealth and how to create it. I want to get my family involved. And I've seen that personally in my own family. We've been borrowing money from our parents and paying them back for all sorts of different things. We're trying to keep the wealth building. I'm trying to teach my kids how this works. This winter, I'm going to get a chance to buy my daughter's first car. And I'm going to use her insurance policy as the tool. And I'm going to start teaching that process. But I think it is deeper than just money.
Well, and that's something I was going to say also, that when Wyatt shared with me his thoughts on this chapter, that was one of the very immediate things he came to was, man, having policies on kids is going to force me to share the why behind it, to share the process that we're doing. So it at least gives us a talking point that we can start sharing this information, this knowledge. Now, you can't keep it a secret, right? Yeah. You can't just have it going in the background and not sit down with the family and do this. But at the very baseline, it is actually helping you to get to that point of transfer of knowledge.
It is. Well, I appreciate you sticking with us and learning along with Joey. We want to make sure that these episodes of Nelson Nash's book is deep and thorough for you. So you can go back and you can read the book and then you can come listen to the different chapters and episodes we've done on this. We only have one or two left. And then you're going to have this whole just series or catalog. I don't know what you will call that, but we're going to put all these together for you. And hopefully that'll help you in your journey. And as you want to pass that along to maybe your kids or your grandkids, it'll be something that will help assist you in that process. So as always, we really appreciate you not only listening, but watching us do this. And I hope you have an amazing day.
This has been the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show to break free of the Wall Street mindset and begin building wealth on your own terms in places you understand so that your wealth will never run dry. See you next episode.